We'll call the meeting of the Ag Committee on today's date, Wednesday, January 13th. It's the time has come. We've got the warning down. I'll be calling the meeting to order. And good afternoon. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01, which is posted online. Kyle Smith, can you conduct the roll call?
Chair Sundin.
Here.
Sundin, present. Vang.
Present.
Vang, present. Anderson.
Here.
Anderson, present. Burkle.
Here.
Burkle, present. Eklund.
Present.
Eklund, present. Hansen R.
Hansen R, here.
Hansen R, present. Hansen J.
Present.
Hansen J, present. Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, present.
Cleavorn, present. Lippert.
Lippert, present.
Lippert, present. Lewick.
Lewick, present.
Lewick, present. Miller. Representative Miller is excused. Nelson.
Present.
Nelson, present. Thompson.
Representative Thompson, present.
Thompson, present. We do have a quorum.
Yeah, quorum is present. We have approval of minutes of the previous meeting. They've been provided and posted online. Vice Chair Vang, I'm assuming you've reviewed the minutes. Do you have a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any questions or corrections on those minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
See no objection, the minutes are adopted. Today, we were to have Representative Lippert's bill, but it's been pulled from the agenda. We'll be hearing that soon. We'll use the committee time today to hear from the department with a number of updates on important issues. All of the presentations were sent to members ahead of time and were posted on the committee website. Please use the raise hand button if you want to ask questions. I guess we've established how to do that. We can take off with the commissioner, Tom Peterson. Welcome to the committee, and continue with your comments. Take off with your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name's Tom Peterson. I serve as commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. It's a pleasure to be with you here today to talk about our response and actions and all things COVID. So it's grateful to be with you today. I have our deputy commissioner, Andrea Vobel, who will be filling in and adding things in my first presentation here today. And then Commissioner Patrice Bailey is also joining us today, Assistant Commissioner, and Assistant Commissioner Whitney Place too, as well, as we walk through our and also our staff members, Meg Moynihan and Dr. Nicole Kneeser, as we walk through our not just our response to COVID, but our meat processing, mental health, hemp, all really big issues for the department. So Nancy, you can go ahead and fire up the next slide, and I'll start there. Well, where to begin? You know, in COVID, you know, I said that in other committees that you think about 2020, you got to think about the past years before 2020, where we had really tough prices for farmers for maybe 5, 6, 7 years, depending on the commodity. In fact, 2018, we had the lowest record farm income in 23 years, of average of $26,000. Then we had 2019, we had the wettest year on record, you know, just a really tough year. We hit the year, turned 2020, we got slammed with COVID. You know, things started out good in 2020. We had a big deal signed with China, USMCA. We had figured that out. Things were looking good. but really went right into COVID. As you're all familiar, the most interesting thing I think to me is people, you know, besides toilet paper, people really worried about their food and what was where that was going to come. We saw the panic buying in stores. You know, and my kind of point is we always had plenty of food, but it was kind of moving around and people really highlighted the issue. People also began buying locally. So in COVID too, we're going to talk about some things that were maybe good that come out of this, believe it or not. So, you know, so everybody learned quickly that these were essential critical infrastructure within our state. Throughout the pandemic, as you can see here, we've conducted a wide variety of activities to respond. Meat processing, you're very familiar with. I know the committee is going to spend a lot of time on this. The livestock issues we're going to talk a lot about today. Grocers, I can't thank the Minnesota Grocers and our Grocers Association enough for their partnership through all this. A lot of unique connections, too, you know, in this pandemic. With our grocers, farmers markets. Think about farmers markets too, just being really an interesting place as people look for things to do. And we'll talk more about that in a minute and just other food and ag businesses. During this response, we've continued, of course, to perform our duties. You know, just like farmers or everybody that can, we went to work every day, our staff went to work every day. You know, I take that very seriously as we considered how do we put our workforce out in the public and face danger. A lot of our employees work out of the building here where I am today. You know, it's tough that of our workforce of about 500 or so employees, about 2.5% have contacted COVID. Luckily, knock on wood, all have recovered and are doing well. But, you know, it's for me, it's tough when it's those public facing folks who are doing inspections or out in the public. We take that very seriously and have taken steps and precautions to protect our staff and our workforce. Next slide, please. I'll go through some of a lot of the different issues. I wanted to start with our work with the grocers and implementing different pieces of this. And Andrea, jump in anytime if I'm missing something. One of the things we did is we created a retail cost share program with help with the legislature that helped really PPE was a really big piece in this. And so grocery stores and markets created a cost share program that you can 77 businesses around the state rewarded $125,000 in 125 different states. Really appreciated that was a really good and working with the association and the stores on that. A lot of cultural markets too as well. It wasn't just bigger. They really got around quite a bit. We awarded mini grants to also to assist producers, schools to respond to disruption of farm to school markets too as well. And you can as well. Okay, next. We created a, this is, I think is really interesting. We created a cost for how food processors and farmers develop e-commerce sites or merchandising in response to. One of the things our marketing department does food shows or be a part of that. We bring in companies. We think that didn't happen this year. Those went virtual. But what do our companies and what do our farmers need? And e-commerce was one thing that I think is interesting. As the pandemic hit, before we had the slowdowns in meat processing, people started to buy locally almost immediately. I, for example, myself, I bought from a neighbor I had never met before. I could buy pork, turkey, whatever I wanted directly from him and right on his website and he delivered it to my farm. Well, we've helped a lot of farmers through this program develop an e-commerce website. And it's one of the things that I've gotten a lot of emails back from the farmers saying how effective this program has been for them. And So again, another positive that's come out of this. Early in session, working with early in COVID, we used $1.25 million appropriated from the state funds to the Second Harvest Heartland for purchase of milk and protein products. And then we followed that up with another $6 million that passed through the Department of Ag to Second Harvest and the food group. And I just want to thank Allison O'Toole and her team at Second Harvest for their partnership and the work during this on hunger issues within COVID. Agriculture plays an important role in that. Next slide, please. I talked a little bit about farmers markets. Keep in mind, right away, as we're hitting with COVID, we weren't sure. Luckily, as COVID was kind of before farmers markets started, but just as they were opening, the St. Paul Farmers Market, for example, was one of the first markets to open. We created quickly a program to assist farmers markets. You can see that we did $13,000 to 51 summer farmers markets. And a lot of this went for purchase sanitizer, extra tables, signage. Those of you that visited some of the bigger markets or even smaller markets would see the steps they took with maybe an extra table, plastic shields, hand sanitizing stations. But people wanted to go out to markets. They worked well this year. Markets learned from each other. You might have saw one-way traffic at some of the bigger markets. Just important. But this cost share, very helpful to those. And again, thank Kathy Zeman and the Farmers Market Association for their partnership in this. We also follow that up because we're seeing winter markets. For example, my farmers market in Cambridge is having a winter market every 2 weeks, and we have a similar program where we've assisted nine so far in that, and that's exciting and a good opportunity for that local sales. We also did $13,000 to assist 53 farmers operating agriculture. I kind of cut out farm stands. Like in my area, I might have a farmer who has a farm stand right on his farm where he sells meat products and things like that. You can get a cost share for that. We saw that with a lot of those on-farm markets, really popular this year. So that was another program we did that really helped just kind of take and get those measures in place. Next slide. You might remember the legislators that served last year. You voted to give us more flexibility in our RFA, the rural finance authority that we have for new members. We have a discovery loan program, and we made COVID-19 an eligible disaster for our disaster relief program. And you can see there we've done six pretty big loans from that. We anticipate doing more. They were slow coming in, but we do have tremendous interest just because of the federal programs that are available. But this is a zero interest on our participation of the loan. So it's a good program. It's still open right now. We're still promoting it. But it's another thing that small thing that you did that is helping several farmers. We also working with our farm business management instructors across the state. They asked for some relief for the farmers that are paying tuition during this time. So working with them, we were able to use $250,000 in COVID dollars and CARES dollars to provide relief to for 75% of the tuition cost for 168 students, providing just a great program, tremendous interest. You know, some of these requests we put in maybe mid-summer, and by the time we were able to work with MMB to get the funding, we had a very short turnaround on a lot of these dollars. And this is one of the programs included in that that, you know, I would mention and really appreciate working with them. Another piece we did that was approved in late October, early November, and again, we had a short turnaround. And I'll talk about pork processing and the pork issues in a minute, but we really looked at all size farmers and needs and requests that we had come into the department for CARES dollars. So we received $500,000to help Minnesota producers that were impacted by local and regional markets. So a lot of farmers that sell maybe directly to restaurants, schools, different things, could apply for. We put an emphasis on Black, Indigenous, and people of color producers. We also had workers, agricultural workers that were allowed to apply for this. It was a very popular program. Again, had a short turnaround, but it was really appreciate our staff working with different groups to put this together in a short time frame. We created and distributed more than 50 COVID-19 guidance documents for farmers, food businesses, markets, wineries, brewers, garden centers, UPICs, entities. I'd say a lot of the other things were like ice show horses, horse shows, all kinds of things. Those are all on our COVID page. If you go to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's website, we have a COVID-19 page right there on the front. You can click on that and see all these different guides. I really thank our communications and our staff for working to put all these together, including with a lot of the different interested parties. Next slide, please. Okay, and this is my final slide, but there's a lot in this, and we're missing a couple of pieces in this, and I apologize. One other piece that we did that should have been maybe in the last slide was we did $175,000 for a loan origination fee program. You might remember that some of the legislators that served last year. Originally, we did it and passed it in May, I think, and we did not have farmers, because that you had to be tied to mediation, we loosened some of those restrictions, but had farmers in distress apply, and then had farmers that were working with farm advocates could apply. And we were able to do 48 grants for 100 and use all the money, all 175,000. Representative Lippert, I think, carried that amendment, our bill on the floor, and really appreciate that. We were able to get some well-needed dollars out again to farmers who needed it. We immediately, as COVID hit, our department stood up our incident management team, our IMT, which is comprised of the Board of Animal, the MDA, all of our divisions, the Board of Animal Health, the MPCA, and the USDA. This was critically important. For a long time there, it seemed we had check-ins every morning. Really just amazing all the different things that were coming up, every day. And I really appreciate the partnerships we had with all of our agencies. Then as time went on, we went to every couple of, days and maybe twice a week, once a week. Now we're just on call as things happen. But it really worked well. I just can't tell you what those days were like. I could have worked 24 hours a day with the things that were coming up, and just really appreciate the assistance we had. At the same time, we created calls. I know Representative Hansen doesn't like this message, but we used our stakeholder call that we had three times a week, and those were open to whoever wanted to join them. We made it known near and far. We had everybody from our mung growers to our corn, soybean, our companies, Cargill, AgriGrowth, that could jump on a call. Many legislators joined those calls. We did those calls 3 days a week to update everybody on our agriculture progress. Then we went to 2 days a week, one time a week, and now we're up to once a month. And so I really, again, use those calls to really communicate with everybody in this. And I, again, thank everybody and all our partners for their help in this. I'm going to spend some time now working on this, and this will be the last thing I'll talk about, but it's going to take a few minutes. Is, the meat processing plants, I got to take a drink a minute here. All right. So the meat processing plants, things were going along in COVID for about the first month. We were dealing with a lot of different things. We did executive orders right away to allow farmers to haul extra livestock, feed, things like that on the roads. We did use those are now not needed, and we are not using those. But we used those for quite a while. Hand sanitizer, working with ethanol plants was a huge issue. Things were going along pretty good. Then we were managing, but it was chaotic every day, but we were managing it. Then the Smithfield plant closed in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And I think many of you remember what happened with that. That was 30+% market of Minnesota's pigs went there every day. well over 10,000 hogs a day going to that plant. About a week later, the JBS plant in Worthington went down. Again, another big, large pot of Minnesota pigs, tens of thousands of pigs a day. Keep in mind, our pig market and also our poultry market on that scale is a just-in-time. So if you're delivering hogs at a certain weight, they have to go. And as they get bigger, it creates a lot of issues. And they're just, what happened was we started to back up hogs very bad and very rapidly as not just those two big plants closed, but then Iowa plants closed, our smaller plants in Minnesota closed. The Hormel plant ran reasonably well for a long time and was able to run on Saturdays and pick up the supply. But however, you know, as you start to back up 30,000 pigs a day, 40,000 pigs a day, there's nowhere for them to go. And we quickly, began to take calls from farmers of what are we going to do? We work closely with the association. We realized that we were going to have to depopulate those pigs at some point, or some pigs. And so luckily in Minnesota, we have been preparing for African swine fever for many years. And we have done a depopulation. We've done composting. The concern was what was going to happen with these pigs. Our rendering at that time, when we first started, we just were told and we're looking, we could not handle that volume. However, so our first thing was we had worked with the county commissioners, with the legislative leaders. We set up a path where we got $11 million appropriated from the Minnesota COVID fund to set up a composting center. At that point, we thought we may have to set up as many as 4 composting sites to handle dead hogs or depopulated hogs. In the meantime, one of the concerns we had was we were having a hard time finding burial sites. We couldn't get into landfills. We were very concerned about the water table, especially in southwest Minnesota, for burying those kind of numbers on hand. To cut to it as quickly as possible, we were able to do all kinds of things to hold hogs in place. We worked with the PCA to be able to hold more hogs on farms. We found other empty barns to move hogs to. Farmers gave away a lot of hogs. You probably saw this on Facebook where people were saying, you want a pig, come get it. That overloaded our local system also very much so. On top of the local processing issues we already had, we put over 100,000 hogs into that system as well, which ultimately also hurt a lot of our smaller farmers because it increased their wait time. Hogs went to other states. I worked with other commissioners in Tennessee, Louisiana, California to find other states that could handle some of our hogs. In the meantime, our rendering business ran a lot stronger. They never, they ran weekends, they ran extra shifts, and were able to take a lot of those hogs off. But the unfortunate part was we ended up having to depopulate hundreds of thousands of hogs. On top of that, at the same time, we began to have to depopulate turkeys. And we ended up having to depopulate hundreds of thousands of turkeys. So of that $11 million, and apologize for not having this in the slide, we spent about $2 million on our composting operations and ran that through the summer. I'm glad to report we're obviously not running that anymore. We asked for and received $5.75 million in dollars to work with our farmers who had to depopulate, $4.5 million for hogs to reimburse producers, and $1.25 million for turkey producers. Of that, we spent $3.1 million on the hogs, and we spent all of the turkey dollars. We also were awarded a $155,000 grant to build a mobile CO2 depopulation trailer. And we have, that's actually 2 trailers. We were also gifted as a state 2 more trailers by the Pipestone systems into our place. I'm just trying to think here. We also worked to develop a carcass delivery scheduling system for producers, which was really hard to try to figure that out. We also had a hotline for farmers to call to take, you know, if they they are having a hard time finding processing or what to do with their pigs. We assigned staff members to take that. Keep in mind, this was a very difficult decision for the growers. This was, you know, these are healthy animals that you spent months and months raising, and then how the frustrating situation. Iowa was a couple of weeks behind us in this whole situation. They ended up not having to do composting and went right to a direct payment for hogs as they went into rendering and other systems. And so that's what we pivoted to, and the payments were made later in that time. You know, the farmers would call me and say, what's the deal? Are we going to be able to get some dollars? We tried to get federal dollars as much as we could to try to help. The federal government did come in now right at the last minute and added some dollars to this. It's not going to make the producers whole, but it'll help. But, you know, the farmers would call me and say, my pigs are too big. I have nothing to do with them. Is there going to be any help for me? Because I'm going to go buy two pistols today and shoot 1,000 pigs. Those are the calls I got. I had farmers calling me and say, you know, in tears, extremely, just not knowing what to do. You know, saying I'm going to haul all my hogs up to northern Minnesota and turn them loose. I'm going to, you know, take them and call out the news media and show and do this right in public in a very frustrating situation. You know, we worked with Ted Matthews a lot, worked with the growers. Luckily, all of our farmers ended up working through this, and I just really appreciate the partnerships we had. So with that, I'll stop. The last thing I did, as I said, we tried to be as transparent as possible. We have our MDA response state .mnus. You can still feel free to share that email with any of your constituents at any time. We're always glad to answer questions. And I'll see if Andrea has anything to add before I don't know if you want to take questions on this, Nancy, or go to the next presentation.
But Andrea? Commissioner Peterson, thank you. We'll hear from Andrea Vauble, and then we'll take some questions. So, Andrea, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, it's good to see a lot of you again, and I'm looking forward to meeting all the new members. So thank you so much for being here. I wrote some stuff that I thought Commissioner Peterson had missed, but then he would get to all of them. So he pretty much covered everything that I was thinking of. One thing I think that we talked a lot about was, you know, and it's just kind of a weird thing to relive all of this because it was so. It was just really crazy and intense as it was for everybody. And we were just so grateful for our staff who were very, very nimble and very willing to be patient with us as we figured it out because no one knew what to do or how to handle it or what issues were going to come up day to day. And they were really willing to think about how to do their work differently. And also many of them still had to come in, whether it was to the lab or to the regulated entities. And so, you know, also working under that fear as many others did too, we were just really grateful that they were willing to do that, along with everyone we had to move to working from home. And it was just a very powerful thing to see how our staff reacted to it. But then also all the people that we serve, you know, we didn't have all the answers right away because it was such a new thing. And so people were really patient. They were willing to share with us and let us know when these issues came up because a lot of them no one could have anticipated. So we're just really grateful that that we had a good communication with folks and they were willing to share with us what was going on with them. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, thank you. Just for the record, this is Deputy Commissioner Andrea Vauble. Questions for Commissioner Peterson or the Deputy Commissioner from the committee? We're going to do a little screen adjustment. My understanding is we're having a little technical difficulty. So let's open it up for questions, please. Hearing none,
Representative Chair Sundin, Representative Anderson, and Representative Lippert have questions.
Okay, Representative Paul Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Peterson and Assistant Commissioner Vobel, thank you and your staff for working under some really difficult times this spring and summer, and really appreciate what you and your department have done. Commissioner Peterson, do you have any more exact numbers as to how many hogs and turkeys were put down, and were any cattle also euthanized or any milk dumped in Minnesota during the early COVID situation?
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you all. I'll start, and then I'll have Deputy Commissioner Vobel put in the numbers on the piece. No milk dumping. Luckily, as we saw out east and in the we were watching that very carefully and closely. We worked very closely with different groups. That's continued somewhat even into this fall. We've been watching closely on that, just as we thought we're out of the woods. With the changing habits of what people are buying, are they buying butter pats? Are they buying blocks? What are you buying? And that has a lot to do with restaurants and grocery stores and things like that. Cattle market, in your area too, our biggest piece, Long Prairie, luckily they never went down. We were never, a cow we can hold a little bit longer. And we did have backups. Green Bay, a lot of our cattle in Minnesota goes to Green Bay. Green Bay was down for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Long Prairie ran at about 20%, I think, for about 3 weeks. And so we were very concerned. At one point, we thought we could have a backup of hundreds of thousands of cattle. We mostly worked through that, and so we're in good shape with that. Deputy Commissioner Vobel can handle the one other thing I'd say with meat, too. We just reopened the Buffalo Lake plant in Buffalo Lake, Minnesota, after 4 years, and good to see that, too, as should also help some of the backup that we have had. But Deputy Commissioner can maybe give some more specific numbers on the hogs and turkeys.
Deputy Commissioner Vobel, please. You are muted. You are still muted.
Andrea's having a hard time getting off mute. Let me see. I got him here.
Hey, Commissioner, tap dance for a little bit.
All right. It'll take me a minute to get this here. Let me see here. We had this all figured out. Who was going to say this? So I'll say, let me just say this by preferencing this, that, we were really close. We got a Okay, sorry. Okay, now you can hear me, right? I'm sorry about this. So everybody can hear me, right? Yeah, okay. I'll preface this again by saying, as we went into this in April, we looked at, what are we gonna need? We asked for and we received $11 million because that's what we originally thought as we were gonna set up this composting site. As we looked at what was going to happen, there was one point where we theoretically thought we would need another $15 to $20 million. Had those plants stayed closed for another week or 2 weeks, we were that close on teetering. Also, if our rendering business had not run like it had, our central byproducts, and been able to take way more animals than they could, we would have had a disaster of enormous proportions. Luckily, the JBS plant, Smithfield plants opened just in time. So we pivoted, as I said, from the spending more money on that. We returned $9 million of the original $11 million to the state, and that goes back into the general fund. We then asked for CARES dollars for agriculture as we saw other states having this program. So on the turkey program, we received 41 applications from eligible turkey producers that had to depopulate or had market loss based on a live weight. And we paid out 3 cents per pound And our payments range from $17 to $100,000, with an average of $26,000. An additional $100,000 was awarded to Genio, which is the only processor who applied. Genio also raises and owns those birds. On the hog depopulation cost share, we received 52 applications from eligible owners of hogs, including integrators and independent owners. Payments were made on the basis of numbers of hogs depopulated between March and September. We paid $45 for a market weight hog and $7.50 for a piglet. We had the payments range from $795 to $350,000, with an average payment of $59,581. In total, we awarded 3.1 of the 4.5 million we were appropriated. I had something else I was going to add on that, but I'll leave it at that for now.
Hey, thank you, Commissioner. Deputy Commissioner Vauble, how did he do?
Anything I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened. I just couldn't get off mute. I didn't do that on purpose, Commissioner, I promise. No, he did a fantastic job. Yeah, I think, as the Commissioner mentioned, we really had no idea what kind of volume we were going to get. And I think there's still some question about total number that had to be depopulated. I think it was helpful to get some back or info back on folks who had market loss from these direct payments. So,
Mr. Chairman, no, thank you. Can I add one more thing, Mr. Chairman?
Certainly, Commissioner.
You know, on some of the bigger integrators, keep in mind that there are many farms maybe in one of those larger farms that works with them. Those farmers, I know it looks like a big number, they may have had, 40, 50 farms underneath them that had to depopulate. They made their contracts whole with those farmers. Then they moved the pigs to a neutral location and depopulated them so that the farmer did not have to go through that in most cases. And so it's a really complex issue. I would just say, there's a lot of dynamics to it when you're looking at it.
Thank you. We've got a few questions yet to get through in a timely manner. Representative Lippert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Peterson, I just want to thank you and your whole team for your work this last year. I know you worked tirelessly, and your effort and skill, I think, led our state through this as best as we possibly could have made it through this. So I just want to thank you. COVID has shown us vulnerabilities in our systems in so many places. And I think it's shown us vulnerabilities in our food system. To have 30% of Minnesota hogs going to one plant, we don't think about it that much until we have trouble with that plant. And suddenly we realize that's a big deal. And I had, one farmer said to me, big is fragile. And I think we've seen that and felt that this last year. So I guess a question, and you mentioned that, as you were looking for all the places you could possibly direct livestock, the local systems became overwhelmed. And I'm wondering if you have thoughts at this point, or if you've had conversations about how we strengthen those local systems. How do we build that out? What are the, what are some of the first steps that we should be taking and we should be having conversations about with one another?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lippert, thank you. I appreciate that. And we're missing another piece on this PowerPoint, too. We also received $1 million in the same time we asked for the dollars for the hog depopulation, which at the same time we saw an opportunity to work on transforming our food system. And recognizing exactly what you're talking about, Representative Lippert, is the ability to recognize a lot of the opportunities. We had a backlog in meat processing going into this, but it further compounded with the hogs that were put on the system, but just with people wanting to buy local. And so we felt strongly about asking and trying to build that out. Dr. Neisser is going to go through that in a couple of moments, but really looking at what's our food system going to look like on the other side of COVID. And looking at that and the processing, supporting our smaller markets is a tremendous opportunity. A lot of our plants, I'll just say, and we're going to have a great discussion about this, you know, in committee this year, is that we can get them dollars, but they weren't ready to expand a lot of times due to workers. You know, some of the plants right now could be running faster, could have more, and this is at all levels. This can be the small town custom locker to the new plant that opened in Buffalo Lake. They could be doing more, but having these workers, and I'm really excited about some of the discussions we're going to have with AURI, with Farmers Union has been working with the MinSKU system to increase the meat cutters, because if we don't have the laborers and the people that can do it, there's opportunities there. So I think that when we asked for those dollars, yes, we had to get through this. It was a horrible thing, as Commissioner Bobble said. We both had a lot of PTSD putting this together the last couple of days. But we asked for dollars for meat processing, but also the $500,000 for the smaller farmers that have lost those markets. That goes a long ways. And so those are just a couple of things that we try to do as we look to balance and build it out.
Thank you. Next question would be from Representative Hansen R.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, thank you to you and your team for the extraordinary response. I think it was important and good. I want to just reference some context of for those of us who may represent districts that are not primarily agricultural. We have a lot of restaurants and businesses that are unable to tap such aid. And you know, I think that's a question in the entire executive branch, if we have the ability. You know, I think of a coffee shop that's a family coffee shop, and they are waiting anxiously for $15,000. And no way will that make them whole for their loss. So if there's a way we can find out a way of reacting deftly and quickly like you are able to do in agriculture, I think that's important. My question, though, is following up on Representative Lippert, is the bigness, you know, this is a significant appropriation of public money that's come through the federal and then also through the state for a private business. And how, you know, is there a response? And these are businesses. And so is there a point where there is a responsibility for a contingency plan if a business fails, if a farm fails? And what if it is a very large farm and there's an economic failure and you're left with livestock or the waste or the feed? How do we respond to that? Is that the role of the taxpayers of the state or the country to pay for that, or is it a role for the business to have a plan for contingency? And that's for an economic failure, but for a act of God failure, how do we deal with those type of things as we're dealing with kind of incomprehensible numbers? This time we had dollars. We may not in the future be able to have those dollars to react quickly. So that's a big question, but how do we deal with producer responsibility as well as the public support?
Commissioner Peterson, please.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, that's a fantastic question. That, you know, you think about things that I can't tell you how many times I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, thinking about things this last year. You know, we talked about dairy cows, you know, and you talk about larger dairies. You know, we really, to me, we look at, you know, if you have hundreds of employees what would happen in this case if, you know, a large dairy got COVID? You know, who would milk those cows? You know, how would that work? You know, these were things we dealt with on a day-to-day basis. What do you do? You know, we had it, you know, I remember the first hog farm, really early on in COVID that called and said, we've got COVID, we've got our employees COVID. What do we do? You know, who feeds our hogs to our employees? What's going to happen here? This was a huge, concern all the time. I mean, we would have our calls, and I'm going to say it to you, our stakeholder calls, and, you know, we'd remind everybody that we have plans in place. We have a COVID plan in place. A lot of farmers put COVID plans in place. What do we do if we have an employee that has COVID? We put them out in a trailer. We isolate them. But, who feeds the livestock? You know, keep in mind this type of thing does happen quite often. Luckily, not as often as happens when we as a department will get notified that, you know, somebody's not feeding their cows or haven't fed them for weeks and we have a barn full. What do we do? And in those cases, we work closely with the Board of Animal Health, just on an animal humane in local government. But that's a great question. I don't have an answer for you. You know, we kind of triaged as we went. We use our team that we have within our agencies to look at those programs and try to have plans in place ahead of time. But, you know, you hit it right on the head. When we look at the bigness on some of these operations, you know, they mostly all have a contingency plan, which is good. You know, so we talk about a bigger dairy, talk about a bigger hog farm. They do have this type of plan, and it made it, unfortunately, Representative Burkle, I see, has his hand raised. And we've been through these before with avian influenza, with other things that unfortunately prepared Minnesota for some of this. But, you know, going forward, it's something we have to continue to have a discussion about. So I appreciate that question. And there, you know, I didn't take any of this lightly with the taxpayer. I advocate for agriculture and our farmers. I ask for what I hear our farmers want and need, and I'm appreciative. And we did return $1 million from the hog piece that we originated to try to get some money back to the state at the end through CARES dollars. We did cap the hog program. Iowa did not cap their hog program, but I felt it was important to do that and to get some of the dollars back as we were trying to figure that all out. So appreciate it.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next, we have Representative John Thompson, please.
Thank you, Chair. And Commissioner, thank you so much for the presentation. And thank you for what you do. This COVID pandemic showed us a lot. Definitely hit us hard. Also, COVID showed us a lot of things that we said were too far out could be accomplished, because we're seeing it being accomplished right now before our eyes. You know, with kids that couldn't afford to pay their lunch debt. They were getting their lunches snatched from them. Now we see them delivering the boxes of lunches with the school buses. So there's things that we see COVID. My question was, I heard you say it was like 500,000 was spent on Black and Indigenous in the community. I know we don't have huge farms in St. Paul in my district. But we do have a lot of urban gardeners. We have a huge Hmong population of gardeners and people who raise their own vegetables. And I know we have a Somali population that they don't necessarily eat, it's culturally specific. They don't necessarily eat the type of meats that we eat. They raise their own meats, and they call it the halal. I don't know, in their culture, I don't want to speak for the Somali community, but I know they took a great loss too. I know COVID has actually had some families have to have one of the family members stay home. So that's the paycheck taken because the kids are at home. There's a lot that COVID has done. And so that's why I wanted to definitely again say thank you for what you've done through this pandemic, Commissioner, and your staff. But just, I just wanted to just hear your thoughts on how we can get, because those dollars that you talk about, there's so much red tape tied to it that the communities that need it, is so hard to get it for these people. It's so hard to get it. It's almost like pulling teeth out of your mouth. And so, but the other thing is they need it. And so I just wanted to just hear your ideas on how we can get those dollars, because at a certain point, those dollars go back. And you can't get, so you, and I heard you also say that the turnaround was so fast on this CARES money. You know, so I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Mr. Peterson, please.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, thank you for that question. And, you know, just thinking too back on some of the things, when you look at this committee and all the different parts, we had an interesting thing right away early with the St. Paul School District, working to connect them with milk producers and milk early in COVID. It was something that our department worked and worked and connected all about. So there's many things that our department do. And thank you for mentioning, you know, all the farmers that, you know, in your district is quite a few. You mentioned the Hmong, a lot of the Hmong growers may not actually farm in your district, but they live in St. Paul and then drive out to their farms, which may be within an hour of the cities. Our Somali population is really growing in the state and, you know, great. We now have a Somali farming association in the state that joins our Hmong association. You mentioned the halal processing is a priority for the Department of Agriculture and a huge opportunity for the state of Minnesota. You'll hear more about that in the future. You know, to the applications, that's an excellent point. Something that, you know, as somebody who farmed myself, who, you know, I would look at programs and when I was doing and fill them out, and I would say, you know, sometimes I'd get about halfway through and throw it in the garbage can because it's just really complicated and it wasn't worth filling it out. So in my previous job with Farmers Union, I actually I scored grants for the department. And that was one thing I would always look at is, you know, just because I know so many farmers, I know, oh, man, this person could really use this money. But, man, they do not know how to fill out a grant, you know, and so. You know, I think our team is really looking at that. Commissioner Bailey has in charge of our grant programs, has really been trying to look at that. We've been looking at how do we put it in different languages, some of our programs. How do we offer feedback and assistance for that opportunity? How do we keep our programs simple? But to Representative Hansen's point, also make sure that we're making an important use of our taxpayer dollars. So good point and something we continue to work on.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next up, we have Representative Burkle. Sorry, I skipped over you earlier.
No, that's okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for coming, Commissioner Peterson. I just want to reference your comment about PTSD. I felt like I needed to at least make a few comments after the High Path AI break I went through in 2015, and knowing exactly what folks are going through from an emotional standpoint. You know, depopulating a farm, composting those birds. I spent most of my summer that year composting turkeys in my own barn. So I can totally relate to the situation. In reference to Representative Lippert and Hansen, Representative Hansen's comments about the food supply chain and its fragility, I think we really saw that during this COVID outbreak. I know at our plant, we didn't start processing until April. So we had the benefit of a little bit of a learning curve. We were able to learn, which was really helpful to keep our employees safe and healthy. And we got through the year without much of a hiccup until the very end. But big is fragile. There's no doubt about it. It also, at the same time, keeps our food affordable and our food safe. But I'm looking forward to more conversations about meat processing and a smaller level in Minnesota as we go. One more question I have is just, during this outbreak, we noticed in our industry, and you probably talked about this at the Department of Ag, that there was a, due to the ethanol situation and the problems they were having in the ethanol industry, we saw a shortage of CO2. And I don't know if you guys discussed that at all at your level, but from a freezing capacity at plants and as far as gas stunning to stun animals, I'm curious if you guys talked about CO2 shortages at all.
Commissioner Peterson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Burkle, yeah, we're hit, you know, just going back through all of these issues. You know, the first time I heard that, one of the bigger companies called me and said, I'm worried that we have about a 3-week supply. Because, as you know, CO2 is a byproduct of ethanol, is one of the main in the upper Midwest. And we'd had some issues before this. Again, not an issue I spent a lot of time on, but I learned quickly. We have tremendous staff, but the first call I got was from that, you know, with ethanol plants being down, people stopped driving, we were all like, yay, ethanol plants, you're making hand sanitizer. And it was so wonderful that they were stepping up and doing that. But we realized that that's an important byproduct. You know, now we're also realizing it with our COVID vaccine supply distribution. You might have seen we're worried about dry ice. We still are, because how do you ramp that up? How do you? So excellent question. And yes, we worked very closely with our companies, with our suppliers right away. I learned a ton about CO2. I'm not afraid to say I use Google quickly and learned all about our staff quickly, made fact sheets and educated us on it. We talked to companies, had backup plans in place. And then just now recently in the last couple of months as the vaccine supply rolled out, another piece, but about four Minnesota makes CO2 and very important. So excellent, again, question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. We're running into a little bit of a time crunch if we're going to get through the agenda. Please keep your questions and responses concise. Representative Cleavorne, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. My question to the Commissioner really has to do about collaboration with the Department of Health and the Department of Labor and Industry. What is happening, and maybe this is a conversation we can have on a future date, but I'd like to know how the three departments are collaborating so that we're sure that our workers are healthy and have good working conditions, so that we can also keep our agricultural and food economy running as well. So it's a combination of both, protecting the worker and protecting the food supply.
Commissioner Peterson, please.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Cleavorn, very closely. In fact, all weekend long, we were working on different issues with the Department of Labor and Industry and Health. I think I look at things a lot of times from a rural perspective. Two, as we're looking at making decisions on different things, but also looking at, statewide, all the different impacts that you've seen today on our restaurants, our food, farmers markets, everything across the state. I recognize our deputy, Andrea Babu, who does a ton of work at our department, but she also has been serving on setting up sites of for the testing across the state, and then is also right now really involved in the vaccine rollout, and we have an important role or position in that. So we're very close and important. You can see I am actually in the office today, and for those of you that haven't been to the Department of Ag, here on the fifth floor, we are share a building with the Department of Health, and I look across at the other commissioners. We're not in the office as much. We stay very closely in touch and communicate a lot between us.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson and Commissioner Vobel. Appreciate your time today. Next up, we have Assistant Commissioner Bailey and Dr. Nicole Neeser. They're going to talk to us about meat processing and markets. Please identify yourself for the record, Commissioner Bailey, and tell us what we need to know.
Yes, thank you, Chair Sundin, and it's really good to see some of the members, and I look forward to also meeting some of the new members as well. As Commissioner Peterson had talked about in regards to the meat industry, it's definitely been a really tough year for the meat industry as well, but we have an amazing staff that has tirelessly been working and making sure that the food supply is safe and that our plants are being inspected thoroughly. And so I would like to introduce Dr. Nicole Neeser. She's our division director of Dairy and Meat Inspection Division, and I will turn it over to her, Dr. Neeser.
Dr. Neeser, would you please identify yourself for the record and continue?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dr. Nicole Neeser. I'm the Director of Dairy and Meat Inspection Division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. For hearing from us today on the meat present issue, and I'm honored to represent a lot of team members in the MDA that worked pretty hard on this issue over the last few months. So I'm going to start here with that first slide that's up, the impact on small and local meat processing industry. As the commissioner mentioned, the closure of those large plants resulted in some significant pressure on our small plants to kind of absorb the extra supplies. It was pretty easy from the beginning to think that the small industry was too small and we really couldn't do much. But we decided, you know, we were going to look and see what we could do, but because I think our approach was every pig, every animal, every farmer that we could help mattered. So this was also compounded by, of course, the movement of consumers towards their local food sources. You know, consumers wanted to be confident that they had food. You know, this also, a lot of these problems, as were mentioned, were present before the pandemic. You know, we had a shortage of small meat processors in Minnesota, especially some areas of the state, as well as a trend towards local food. And so this really pushed us in that direction. So you can move to the next slide. Our approach basically was twofold. We wanted to fill the capacity that we had. So focusing on figuring out how to ensure that the processors that weren't busy were busy, or if they wanted to be busy, and then expanding capacity if we could. So in order to fill the capacity we had, we essentially went out and asked all of our processors if they had room for more to process more animals. If they were willing and interested, we started a list of processors that were willing to expand. And then we also collected a little bit of information about if they weren't willing or couldn't, why they couldn't. Was it a cooler space issue? Was it they didn't have enough employees? Was it they just didn't want to? And that information was pretty useful as we moved forward to try to develop some solutions. We also provided some people. The commissioner mentioned we basically had a phone numbers and hotline. We put people's names up on the website, say, if you're looking for some place to get your pig slaughtered, call these people. We'll see if there's someone on our list that can help you. And vice versa, if you're a processor that has room, please call us and let us know. You know, we may be able to make some connections. We also looked at ways that we could potentially expand capacity. Were there plants out there that could change their operations a little bit to help livestock producers make their products more marketable, inspected product versus custom product? So we introduced something called the Fast Track Equal to Inspection Program. This was done to assist our plants in moving to inspected slaughter more quickly so that those animals could have, or the products from those animals would have be able to be marketed more widely, as well as donated to food shelves. We also, basically some of our staff spent every day, you know, our regional supervisors that help get new plants licensed, literally they were on the road every day looking at new plants, looking at plants, trying to figure out if there was ways that they could expand, if they were interested, and that kind of thing. So we really were focusing on those two areas. We also did a lot of outreach, which is I think on the next slide here. Early in the pandemic, there were lots of people. As soon as those large plants started going down and the problem became apparent, we were flooded with calls of people wanting to help. You know, this was fantastic, and some people had some really great ideas about how we could help help alleviate this problem, even in a small way. A lot of times the ideas were legal, but a lot of times the ideas were not legal, and so we were trying to stay within the legal realm of processing and trying to encourage people to work within our existing systems. So we started After getting so many inquiries, we decided to do a webinar, and we did a webinar called The ABCs of Small Meat Processing, which was very, very well attended. We had some great participation from the audience, and that's essentially started a series of webinars that we followed up with a poultry processing webinar. We recently just finished up some poultry processing listening sessions, small group focus groups, to get more information from poultry processors on their barriers, and really discovered, the importance of some of that outreach and honestly the advantage of using this virtual tool to reach small producers. It really is a fantastic way to reach small producers. If we want to move on to the next slide, I think the next two slides are some of the commissioner's missing slides, I think. He talked about some of the grants that MDA gave, and this first grant slide talks about the Rapid Response Mini Grant Program. So one of the things that we did when we asked producers or meat processors what they needed to do more, what did they need to expand, a lot of times they said, well, I need a new cooler, or my bacon slicer is not big enough. I can't do it. I can't do any more than I can do. We worked very closely with our marketing division, and they developed a rapid response grant to help these livestock producers and meat processors purchase some of those things they needed to just expand their capacity just a little bit, or add a cooler. And this was really successful. There were a lot of improvements made in our processors. A lot of them were able to add coolers, which will serve them and our local food industry well into the future. The commissioner also mentioned some other grants that we administered. So purchasing supplies and equipment to create a safe working environment for employees and customers. So that was $340,000 to 7 businesses, as well as we fast-tracked some fiscal year 2021 value-added grants for meat and poultry processors to help increase their capacity to process additional Minnesota livestock. And some of that money is still being used, again, very similar for coolers and an expansion. And as noted before, we provided a person to help match up services for hog farmers seeking alternative processing locations. And I guess also a little bit of a part of that was like helping to match up farmers who were interested in donating money or pigs for food shelves and helping to match them up with processors who were able to do that. The next slide on grants also is the figures around those turkey and hog depopulation grants that the commissioner mentioned earlier. These are numbers that have already been mentioned. So this was definitely part of our early response in that realm. The next slide, I mentioned earlier something called our Fast Track Equal to Inspection Program. And for those of you who are not as familiar with how meat inspection works, it's probably something we'll learn a little bit more about as you go here. But it usually typically takes a plant several months to pull together all the documentation, all the paperwork, all the labels, perhaps the equipment necessary to get under what's called Minnesota Equal to Inspection. And that's a continuous inspection where an inspector is there present looking at those products. And that getting under that program allows that livestock producer or processor to sell those products anywhere in Minnesota. It typically will take a processor several months, sometimes 2 to 3 months if someone was real motivated. We created some template documents and utilized a provisionary grant process to allow these plants to join essentially before they demonstrated they met the requirements, as long as they could meet the very minimum basic requirements. So we allow those plants to go. So we had a couple of plants join us within a couple of weeks of demonstrating their interest. So they were in operation as of May. And we essentially assigned a caseworker to these plants who went to them every other week to make sure that they were able to meet their requirements and grow into meeting all of the more difficult requirements that come along with having a HACCP food safety plan, and to make sure they were still producing safe food. So this was a pretty successful program for us. I think we're getting switching through the slides there, but this was a pretty successful program for us. On the next slide, on the first results slide, we added 4 Minnesota Equal to Slaughter establishments. You know, 4 doesn't sound like a big number, but actually we only have about 20 slaughter establishments in the Equal to program. So 4 is a pretty big number for us to add, especially given that we rarely add slaughter establishments for Equal to inspection. These plants have been successful. They continue to operate in our program. 3 of these plants were in rural Minnesota, and one of them was actually in South St. Paul, was actually a live animal market converted into a live animal market and a sort of more traditional processing plant. That plant has been extremely successful and helped significantly alleviate the shortage of sheep and goat processing space, which we didn't talk a lot about, but there was a pretty significant shortage of that in the spring as well. We did unfortunately have some plants drop out of our Equal to inspection program because of other market changes, the restaurant closures, impact on airport businesses, impact on daycares and meals and things. And so you won't see that our overall numbers increased substantially. Part of that's because of the balancing out of those that we lost due to those other market changes. We did see some very big growth in our custom exempt processing plants. And these are plants that process, provide service to the owner of the animal. And that meat is then returned to the owner of the animal. This was a pretty, pretty popular way for people to get local food, right? To buy a half a pig or a quarter of a beef cow from a local farmer. And so we saw a pretty significant increase in the number of plants. So we increased 16 plants between April 1st and December 1st. Mostly these were new builds or remodels of existing facilities. We did lose a couple of plants due to what I guess I would call kind of normal issues, retirement of folks who decided not to continue, or we just recently lost a plant due to a fire. But we did definitely see an increase. So the next slide is just a graphic that shows how many the change in plant numbers since the beginning of this year. And you can see that overall that trend is up, and it's driven largely by that increase in custom exempt plants. After the next slide, our current status, we continue to do a lot of visits with a lot of people interested in meat processing. Some of our supervisors are still on the road near the A looking at facilities, talking to people about what they want to do. There's a lot of interest out there in getting into meat processing, which is really fantastic. Custom exempt continues to be the biggest area of growth. Part of this is it's easiest to get into. It's a great way to get started. With the markets right now, with restaurants really being negatively impacted, that has definitely limited the need for Equal to or USDA inspected product to go to those restaurants. So really custom exempt has been the biggest area of growth and will continue to be. A lot of processors continue to report being booked, fully booked well into 2021 this year. And even some have reported well into 2022. This is great news, obviously, for their businesses. Some local foods producers have struggled a bit with this because they now find that it's much more difficult to find space in the local processors that they're used to using. And so they found that planning is much more necessary part of their business. We're currently working with 3 new Equal to slaughter establishments that should come under inspection this spring, 4 new processing establishments, and at least 3 new custom exempt slaughter establishments that should be coming on board yet this spring. As the commissioner mentioned a little earlier, we continue to hear from our processors that workforce and labor is a really big issue for them. A lot of the responses we got when we asked about whether you were interested in expanding, a lot of them said, we can't find employees, we can't expand. We can't find people to work here and or a stable workforce. So that's a very big issue. And that existed pre-COVID, no doubt. This was a significant issue that has been around for the past several years, but certainly was exacerbated and continues due to COVID. So with that, I think I'll wrap it up and turn it back over to you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Assistant Commissioner Bailey or the Dr. Kneser? Okay, Representative Eklund, your hand is up first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the report on what's going on with the processing plants, Ms. Kneser. I can't get my video to work, but that doesn't matter. So my question is, a lot of these plants, you're talking about increased production and doing kind of this kind of stuff, and Representative Lippert mentioned this in one of the earlier presentations. What measures are you taking for worker safety? I come from an industry, not food processing, but every time there's increased production or things start meant to go faster, we need to make sure that there is an equal and balanced approach to taking care of the workers there, because without them, they're not going to be able to process the food. So could you address that, please?
Dr. Kneser? Or Commissioner Bailey?
Or I could take that too if that worked.
Or Tom.
Peterson. Okay.
I'm afraid, Mr. Chair, I'm afraid you broke up. I couldn't understand the question. Could you please repeat that?
Representative Eklund, please repeat your question for Dr. Kneser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Kneser, I appreciate the presentation. My concern is, one of my concerns is this, is when we have, coming from a production facility myself, when we have increased production, doesn't seem like there's always the same amount of worker safety brought into it. So I'm just want to know what the agency is doing to make sure that as well as increased production, we also are taking worker safety and worker rights into consideration.
Dr. Kneser, please.
Mr. Chair and Representative. Yes, great question. One we actually got several times during the pandemic is how are we making sure workers continue to stay safe? Probably most notably, the size of plants that we are talking about here are very small processors. So sometimes we're talking about 2 to 3 people. Sometimes we might be talking about on the high end 20 to 30 people. But still, safety is important, particularly with respect to COVID and keeping their workers safe. And so we've been very proactive in conducting outreach with our plants on COVID preparedness plans, making sure that they have plans, making sure that they are implementing them in a non-regulatory sense, just encouraging them to make sure they're protecting their business, for one, and protecting their employees and keeping their employees safe. If workforce is an issue, keeping your employees safe that you have is certainly a very important step to keeping your business going. And so, I think our plants have responded very well to that. I think in more recent months, we've been seeing a few more challenges associated with the fact that our plants have been operating. Some of these have been operating 7 days a week, real long days for a number of months now, and we're starting to see a few more COVID-related issues or other issues. And so, we look for that. In terms of MDA does not conduct regulatory inspections in these larger plants, and I know that there are definitely worker safety issues, of course, that come along with expanding production, line speeds, and those kinds of things. Those are typically run more closely through USDA, FSIS, and the federal agencies.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. We have three more questions in about 5 or 6 minutes to complete them. Representative Burkle, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious about Equal To and HACCP, and maybe we're getting way too far in the weeds and probably don't have enough time to talk through this, but curious about how you how smaller plants deal with the HACCP issues larger plants have to deal with and what Equal To means. Could you answer that for me?
Dr. Kneeser? Another problem. Maybe we can come back to that one.
Yeah, it's long. So.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Nelson, please.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of a question I've got. One of the things I've heard from my local processing plants has been, and it's been touched on in the presentation here, was the skilled workers for cutting meat and things like that. And so what are there schools? Are there, what can we do? Is there ways that we can support that? And I think, a lot of ways trades overall are really kind of making a comeback. And I think one of the areas that I think has brought especially the light in, during this pandemic has been meat processing specifically on not having a skilled individual that can do it. So just what can we do to help encourage that?
Dr. Kneeser, please.
Mr. Chair, if she's having connective, I could answer that quickly maybe. She might have connectivity issues.
Please, Commissioner
Peterson. Mr. Chair and Representative, I missed a little bit of that question, but I believe it was with respect to, Tom, can you, Commissioner, can you take that question?
Yep, absolutely. Real quick, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm really excited. I hope the committee really gets into this because, as I said in my comments, we had people say we could expand both big and small, but we need workers. We need skilled workers. So Central Lakes College in Staples area has really stepped up and has been looking at adding a class. They're looking at some support. Farmers Union's been leading an effort with our staff and others to create a program there. Other schools like Alexandria and others are looking at adding this. AURI, TUA is a fantastic partner in this. They're going to come and I think at some point and talk about some of the things that they can work with as well as extension. So I look forward to the discussion in this, and I think all the representatives is something we can come together on and work on.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Lewick, you have 1 minute for a question and an answer.
Actually, Commissioner Peterson kind of hit the nail on the head. One of the cautions that we have to have about when we bring our education, post-high school education folks into the play is to make sure that we take a hard look at how our trade unions, people like the 49ers, pipe fitters, they literally model that training on the workplace, not what works in the schoolhouse. And so that is the challenge. In both, some of us learn a little bit of meat cutting from a granddad or a father or somebody on the farm. But there's a whole nother element there that's pretty technical, that's like workplace safety regulations and that stuff. But we really need to reach out to those establishments and let them model that curriculum as we move forward, because we waste a lot of time and effort sometimes on a new person coming into the workplace and undo or fix the things that they didn't get picked up at the basic level in school. So that, to me, is probably the biggest challenge. And I keep pointing to the way we do that with the trade unions. Put you on a piece of machinery, but that's only after you've learned all the other things before they give you the key, and then they watch you like a hawk because you got to perform on the job effectively. And so we got to make that relationship with the existing large and small businesses to make this really work. So anyway, not just a comment, not a question. Commissioner Peters is way ahead of me on this one.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. We've exhausted our time for today. I really appreciate the input from everyone. We've got a couple of dangling issues here, the mental health initiatives and the hemp rulemaking and participation. We'll hear from them in a future meeting. So with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.